Greetings, kind listeners, and welcome. We continue with another segment from our Fireside Mystery Theater live at the New York Public Library show. Before we do, we wonder if you could take a moment to check out podcastlistener.com/fireside to fill out a quick survey. This survey will help the brands that support our podcast deliver the best ads for you, and that helps us. Head to podcastlistener.com/fireside. We'd really appreciate it. This episode was brought to you by Fifth and Maiden, crafted by hand and designed to empower. Check out the official jeweler of Fireside Mystery Theater at fifthandmaiden.com and on Instagram with the handle at fifthandmaiden. Mention you're a Fireside listener and that you'd like your order with a bit of shimmer and receive 15% off plus free tax and shipping in the 48 states. Believe it or not, the following thrilling tale was recorded live at the 53rd Street branch of the New York Public Library on March 9th, 2017. We take you there now.
And now this word from our sponsor.
Ali Silva, and check this out.
What's wrong, James? Why, you're beet red.
Why did you insist on doing this New York Public Library gig?
What are you talking about? This is a great gig.
Oh, such delicious torture.
Why are you squirming around like that?
We started trading stares, and now she's just gone cold on me.
What is the matter with you, James?
Don't you know by now? I have this thing for... How do I say this? I have a thing for... Sexy librarians.
Sexy librarians?
Oh, for me, librarian is the very definition of the word sexy. I melt at the sight of bookish, bespectacled women carrying sensible NPR morning edition tote bags. It's the only reason I agreed to do this show with the New York Public Library in the first place. This place is crawling with hotties. Oh, but her... Oh, I can't take it. I'm gonna go put my head through a wall.
Calm down, James.
I'm half mad with desire.
Shh.
Ooh. Did you see that? She just shushed me. Be still, my beating heart. Allie, tell me, how can I win her love?
Well, you can stop creeping her and everyone else out by lurking around the card catalog with your tongue hanging out of your mouth like that.
Oh, how could she be immune to my considerable charms?
Oh.
The rich and mellifluous tones of me, James Reeser's commanding baritone. Especially when I coo to her those immortal words in Spanish. ¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
Yeah, I wonder how.
I'd be willing to throw it all away, just to ride away on a reading rainbow with her. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Shh.
Oh, hurt me again.
All right, James, before you do anything extreme, here, hold this. You need a proper conversation piece to help break the ice.
A statement bracelet?
From Fifth and Maiden Handcrafted Jewelry. What kind of statement are you trying to make?
Only that I love you.
And the Fifth and Maiden Handcrafted Jewelry offers wholesale organic luxury jewelry and housewares that blend clean lines...
With a bit of shimmer.
With a bit of shimmer.
Made with exquisite natural finds directly from the stunning California coastline, all Fifth and Maiden pieces are handcrafted in their SoCal studio. To learn more, just go to their website, fifthandmaiden.com, or their Instagram page, at Fifth and Maiden. Fifth and Maiden are the official jewelers of Fireside Mystery Theater.
Mr. Reeser, is it?
Yes.
You must be some kind of overdue book.
What?
'Cause you've got fine written all over you.
Since 1919, Robert L. Ripley's Believe It or Not, a widely circulated series of newspaper cartoons, films, radio, and TV shows, as well as a worldwide fleet of museums, better known as auditoriums, has created a warehouse of astonishing documents that capture the human form in ways that steadily defy the norm. Consider the following bits of astonishing bodily trivia. Robert Wadlow, the world's tallest man, was already 8 feet 1.5 inches by the time he was 17 years old.
The eye popper, Paul Whitaker of Atlanta can project his eyes from his head at will.
Martin Joe Lorello was also known as the Human Owl, and he can turn his head in rotation a full 270 degrees.
Harry McGregor can pull his wife Lillian on a wagon using a chain hooked to his eyelids.
The lighthouse man of Chongqing, Sichuan Province, China, goes about the streets at night with a lighted red candle 7 or 8 inches at length, stuck in the vertex of his skull.
The boy who died of old age, Charles Charlesworth, born in Staffordshire, England in 1829, reached maturity and grew whiskers at the age of 4. His face was wizened, his hair whitened, his skin shriveled, hands knotted with conspicuous veins and tendons, voice piping, and gait and standing posture that of an old man. He died suddenly in a faint when he was just 7 years old.
While Robert Ripley was a colorful and fascinating character in his own right, there lies an unsung hero in his estimable shadow. The man who discovered each of these fascinating facts, an unusual man named Norbert Perlroth. Perlroth was a Polish émigré and the main researcher for Ripley's Believe It or Not from 1923 until 1975. He was fluent in 14 languages and spent 6 to 7 days a week in the main branch of the New York Public Library on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. He would comb books and scan periodicals in order to furnish the 4 to 6 Believe It or Nots required for each day's newspaper cartoon. In the following story, an original radio play by Silben Sandovar, named appropriately enough, Perlroth, we mix the fact of the man with a very liberal dose of bizarre fantasy. Our story begins one morning in Robert Ripley's Midtown Manhattan office. Ripley is in the middle of drawing a cartoon when a visitor arrives.
Hello, Bob. Bob? Bob, oh, for the love of...
Hey there, Mr. Perlroth. What's this all about? I was listening to that.
You couldn't hear me, Bob.
But I like to have music on while I draw my cartoons. And now what can I do for you, Mr. Perlroth?
It's Monday.
Oh, yes, that's right. So it is. Pardon my attire, Mr. Perlroth. I like to be comfortable while I'm drawing.
I see. But if that's the case, why are you wearing those saddle shoes with your... Oh, my. What color are those silk pajamas?
Mauve, Mr. Perlroth. Mauve. Imported direct from Shanghai.
And I thought your radio was too loud.
Hey, what's that?
Nothing, Bob. Anyhow, here with me are the newest items. About 2 weeks worth.
Let me see. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. You provide these fantastic bits faster than I can draw cartoons for them. Sometimes I worry you're going to run out one day.
We won't. Not as long as I'm around.
You ought to take a vacation, Mr. Perlroth. I worry sometimes that you spend too much time cooped up in that library on 6th Avenue.
It's on 5th Avenue, Bob. You should come visit one of these days. It is, for my money, the greatest place on earth. Every day is a terrific adventure. It's easily the finest library in the whole world. I couldn't ask for a better workplace.
I'm sure it's lovely, but we provide you with a handsome office of your own, do we not?
I like my office fine, Bob. But, as you know, the great library at Bryant Park is where the obscure and hidden fruits of knowledge needed for our beloved enterprise are harvested each day.
Well, you are an excellent harvester, I'll give you that. I'm sure I've told you that on more than one occasion. So, as I was saying, you ought to take a vacation. Come along with me on my next journey.
I've already done that once before. That was not a vacation.
You just don't know how to have any fun. Damn it, Perlroth, I'm convinced I'm the fellow who could show you how.
I appreciate the offer, but...
I'm going to Tibet this time. Do you realize how few Americans get to travel there?
I'm quite aware. After all, I planned your trip and created your itinerary based on my research.
So you did. So you did. Splendid. I just can't wait to gaze upon the monastery of Patala with my own eyes.
Be sure to make it a point to see the alphabet tree in Kumbum Monastery. Supposedly actual Sanskrit characters miraculously appear on the leaves of the tree.
That should be interesting. So what do we have here among your items for this week, Mr. Perlroth? Let me see here. You have beautiful handwriting, by the way, Mr. Perlroth. Have I ever told you that?
Thank you, Bob. Here's a few samples of this week's Believe It or Nots. Okay, how about this? I have a barrel full of dimes and a barrel full of quarters. Which one is the more valuable?
Well,
the dimes, of course. A barrel of dimes equals $96,536. A barrel of quarters only gives you $87,975.
Well, I'll be sure to bear that in mind next time I'm collecting loose change around the house. Good. What else do we have?
Well, have you heard the story of the book that is treated like a king? The holy book of the Sikh religion in India, the Granth Sahib. Pious servants fan the book all day long with golden-handled fans made of peacock feathers. In fact, the Golden Temple of Amritsar was built at a cost of $40 million for the express purpose of housing the book, making it the world's most expensive book cover.
Not bad.
And this was a particularly exquisite find. Have you ever heard of Arthur McMurrow Cavanagh?
No. Do tell.
He was an Irishman from County Carlow. He was a greatly respected man in his time back in the 19th century. He served in Parliament for 14 years, and he excelled at hunting, yachting, fishing, horseback riding, and was a fine painter and draftsman. He also married a beautiful woman and fathered 7 children.
Well, that's fairly interesting, I suppose.
What's even more interesting, Bob, is that our good Arthur McMurrow Cavanagh achieved all of these things, although he was born without arms or legs.
Well, bully for him, I say. By gum, I like that one. Hey, I think I might want to use that anecdote for my radio program. Make a note of that one for me, would you?
Certainly, Bob.
Well, this looks to be yet another excellent batch of Believe It or Not, Mr. Pelroth. Once again, I congratulate you. Now, if you'll excuse me, even though you're ahead of your deadlines, I'm falling a bit too far behind on mine. I still have a number of these damn cartoons to finish, and hell if I let that get in my way of having beers and oysters this afternoon with my pal Bugs. Going back to the library, I take it?
Yes, I have quite a long to-do list.
Fine, then. Mr. Pelroth, I still say you need to spend a little less time at that library. It leaves you gloomy and sour-looking. You look like you need some sun. How many days a week are you in there?
6, sometimes 7 days a week.
Oh, for Pete's sake, I don't mind paying you for all that time, but Mr. Pelroth, take up a hobby. Even better, how about a sport? Have you ever boxed before? It's the best exercise there is. The footwork alone. Jab, jab.
I appreciate your concern, Bob. But I'm in excellent health, of body as well as of mind. See you later.
Oh, hello, Mr. Pelroth.
Hello, Louise. What's going on here? Is this part of the library closed for the day? I was hoping to gain access to some microfiche from Stroudsburg.
No, just for a couple of hours. It's for a reception being thrown by Thelma Astor.
Oh, she's a relation to the great Jacob Astor, the founder of this wonderful library, is she not?
And still one of our biggest benefactors, Mr. Pelroth.
I understand. I'll just come back a little later, then.
Oh, it's all right. Why don't you come in? There's some very tasty hors d'oeuvres they've laid out for this one. You can be my guest.
As a matter of fact, I am feeling a little hungry. I had to skip lunch this afternoon. Are you sure my being there is not going to be an imposition of any kind?
You're with me. You'll be fine. They won't know and they won't care. Come on, let's see how the other half lives for a moment, why don't we?
I can never say no to you, Louise.
This way. Over here, Mr. Pelroth. Let's grab some of these deviled eggs here. They've hardly touched any of them.
You first.
Ooh, so naughty. I think I'll have some of these stuffed mushrooms, too.
Look, that's Thelma Astor, isn't it? She's coming this way. Are you sure we're not going to be in trouble being here noshing away on their food?
We're fine. Besides, I think she's had a little bit too much to...
Excuse me, miss. Isn't there anyone here who can help me? No one is helping me.
Ooh, boy, I can smell the gin from here.
Shh! I'm sure I can help you. What's the matter, Miss Astor?
I've lost my brooch. Where is it?
What did it look like?
Allow me to hazard a guess. It's from Tiffany's?
Yes.
And it's really more of a pendant than an actual brooch with white agate stone cameos with little cherubs.
Yeah, breath.
Surrounded by pave and closet diamonds mounted in white gold.
Oh, you've seen it.
I'm looking at it right now, floating in the punch bowl behind you.
Oh, yes. That's it. Thank you, Mr.
Perlroth. Norbert Perlroth.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Perlroth. I don't know what I would have done without that brooch. It's the single finest heirloom I have from my Uncle Jonathan. Oh, poor Uncle Jonathan.
I take it he's passed away recently?
No, not really. Not quite. He'd been dying of cancer. There he was, at death's door, and then he just, poof, disappears. We go into his bedroom one morning, and he's, well, he's just not there, you see.
That's odd.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. What are we going to do?
This must be a difficult time for the Astor family.
Oh, he's not an Astor. He's a Headley on my mother's side.
Jonathan Headley.
Well, I'm very sorry, Miss Astor. I hope they can get to the bottom of this.
It's so, so, so strange. Where is he? Where could he have gone?
This is the same Jonathan Headley who has been very involved in the isolationist movement here in America, is he not?
Well, he was. Until he became ill. But we don't like to talk about that, all right, mister?
I apologize for my forwardness, ma'am. Do you know who was the last person that you know of who saw your Uncle Jonathan?
Everett Goodstone was the last person seen with him. That son of... But you don't need to know about that either.
I can see why you feel that way.
Why is that?
I'll tell you later.
Oh, I'm sure he's dead. My Uncle Jonathan, that is. There's no way he could be alive, given the state that he was in. I just wish I could know what happened to him, and know where is he. Know where he is. Where he is.
You'll have to excuse me, ladies. Miss Astor, Louise, I just now noticed what time it is. I beg your pardon. I'm afraid I have some work I need to attend to.
Where are you going, Mr. Perlroth?
To Rare Collections, to satisfy my curiosity regarding something related to this discussion.
May I join you?
If you'd like.
You're up to something, Mr. Perlroth. What is it? What do you have there?
Oh, be careful. These documents are quite delicate.
What are they?
Back issues of the American Review from the year 1845.
This has nothing to do with Jonathan Headley's disappearance, does it?
It has something to do with Edgar Allan Poe. And yes, it may well have something to do with Jonathan Headley, too. Maybe.
But it's 1936. Edgar Allan Poe died in, I believe, 1850 or so.
1849. Now I need to check some more current periodicals. Here it is, just as I recall. It was mentioned in the Suffolk County Argus and also here in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle from this past week.
What was mentioned?
Look here. This is a photograph of our missing Jonathan Headley from a few years back. And if you look here in this issue of the Brooklyn Eagle from 2 days ago, you can see in the accompanying photograph from this article.
American Nazi colony thrives in Yaphank, Long Island.
That we can see not only Everett Goodstone, the last man to ever see Jonathan Headley, but not too far in the background. It's a little hard to see, but if I pass my magnifying lens over it, you can see he's a little bit cropped out of the photo. But that is unmistakably our missing Uncle Jonathan.
Wow! Yes, it does look like him. How can you be sure?
It's him.
So he's not sick after all?
Well, I believe he might be something worse than sick.
So you're going to inform Thelma Astor, right?
Not yet. I'm afraid there's something very dark and strange here that might be too incredible for some to digest.
But you have to tell her somehow.
Not yet.
Then what are you going to do, Mr. Perlroth? Where are you going?
I'm just going for a little stroll. I'll see you tomorrow.
Mr. Perlroth!
Ah, there he is.
Oh, Luis, are you... Why are you following me?
Why are you following Everett Goodstone?
Luis, you really shouldn't have... I shouldn't have shared so much with you.
Well, how did you find him?
The article went on to say that he was giving an address tonight at the Masonic Temple on West 23rd Street. Sure enough, I spotted him leaving the event and have been tailing him ever since.
You know, we should just call the police, Mr. Perlroth.
Bastard, I'm going to lose him. He went around that corner.
I see him. He just went into Penn Station.
Toward the Long Island Railroad. I really wish you wouldn't have come along with me, Louise.
Well, how often do I get to see Long Island?
This is not a sightseeing. Oh, okay. Let's just keep our eyes on Mr. Goodstone, and let's not make it too obvious that we're following him.
So, what stop do you think we'll be getting off at?
You wait and see. He'll be getting off at Yaphank, home of Camp Siegfried. A curious little hamlet on Long Island, about 70 miles from Manhattan. A nice, tidy, tree-lined suburb, complete with cute, quaint little streets, named after Goering, Goebbels, and Adolf Hitler. Believe it or not.
All right. You can let us out here, driver. Here you go. Thank you.
We're in the middle of nowhere.
I didn't invite you to come along, you know.
I'm cold.
Here's my coat.
Thanks. Are you sure this is the farmhouse?
Yes, he's here. I'm sure of it.
How sure are you?
You'll feel less cold if you keep moving. Let's walk.
So, why are you going to all the trouble to do all of this, Mr. Perlroth?
For two reasons, mainly, Louise.
What are they?
For one, Miss Thelma Astor is a great friend and financial supporter of our beloved library, my absolute favorite place on this great earth. And, secondly, I am a Jew from Poland. I have some relations and friends back in Europe whose lives are being made a living hell by the Nazi Party.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Perlroth.
Wait, what's that?
Oh, I don't like the sound of that one bit.
I can see inside the barn. Good Lord! Quick! Duck behind this plow!
What did I just see there?
I don't know. I'm gonna try to get a closer look.
Oh, no, you won't. Stay right where you are.
Well done, Christine, my love. Who are you two? Police? FBI?
We're sorry. We just wandered onto your property. Our car had broke down a few miles away.
Really? And how did you manage to do that while following me all the way from Manhattan? Now, I'm only going to ask you once more. Who are you?
I'm Louise Vesey. I'm just a librarian. And this is Norbert Perlroth. He works for Believe It or Not by Robert Ripley.
That hokey newspaper cartoon? I liked your other story better. Okay, Christine, let's take them out into the woods.
I know all about you and Jonathan Headley. I know he's here.
Well, there's only so much credit I can grant you there. What did you say your name was?
Norbert! Norbert Perlroth!
Louise! Do you mind?
All right, Norbert. What else do you know? And you're going to tell me how you know it, or you're dead.
Mr. Perlroth!
Shut up!
I know that you are not only a key driving force for the American Nazi Party, but you also have even greater ambitions to undermine the government of the United States of America.
Really? And how do you figure I'm doing that?
Well, you're something of a meddler with the black arts and sciences.
A meddler? A meddler! I should have you shot just for saying that. I'm no meddler. I am a master.
You have no right to keep that poor man alive.
So you know. How is it that you know?
It is my job. My work to know things, to find things, no matter how deeply buried and hidden they are. First, I found out about you. You have published certain obscure and obscene papers, mostly written in a corrupt and coarse Latin, that dwell on the science of mesmerism.
Go on.
You discovered, as I did, that certain physicians in the early to mid-19th century perfected a certain type of mesmerism, or as we call it today, hypnosis. That can, if utilized properly at the precise moment before death, can prolong human life indefinitely. When Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Facts in the Case of M. Voldemar, was published in 1845, a story about a man being kept alive in a manner such as this, it was not presented as a work of fiction, but as a piece of journalism. He later recanted and declared the story a hoax, not because it wasn't true, but because his conscience wouldn't allow him to proliferate something so completely poisonous to human civilization, an insult to the very nature of human existence. A thing of great evil that had to be forever quashed. You, somehow, crept into Jonathan Headley's home knowing his time was nearing its end, and you hypnotized him.
And why would I do that?
Why? Allow us to have a better glimpse of what you have there in your barn.
Don't you move another step.
It's all right. Let him.
Look at this grotesque banquet table you've set here, with all these decaying old men seated around it. And not just Headley, but several others I dare say that I recognize. All powerful men of politics, business, and industry. All ghoulishly captured at the moment of death by your hypnosis, and being made to serve. To serve
our Führer. But you're wrong about one thing. They are not being kept alive against their will. They are the last of the truly great men of this country, true patriots who understood that the way of the Nazi Party is what is best for America. They only wanted to live to see the day where that dream could be fully realized, and I was only too happy to oblige. Each one of these great men gave me their consent and their word of honor that we may enlist their great minds to aid and counsel our noble cause. These men are not enslaved. I would not make men such as these suffer such an indignity. No! No! It is I who is their obedient and humble servant.
All praise to the Führer.
Shut up! This is your last warning!
Everett is correct. Although it gives us tremendous pain to exist in this morbid state, we are still willing to sacrifice our final peace for the betterment of country and this world. We meet each day in secret to share our wisdom, to give counsel, to strengthen our allies, and to crush our enemies. Crush our enemies. And anyone who dares stand in our way.
You all should know, I have learned just enough of this foul art in order to say this to all of you. I need you now to listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Wait, what? What are you doing, Christine?
At the sound of my voice, I command you. I command all of you to awaken. Awaken. Then return to sleep. Eternal sleep.
Christine! Shoot him now! You fool! You've just murdered them! Murderer!
Oh my God! Their bodies! They're the flesh! He's falling away from their bodies!
Look away, Louise!
Oh.
That's because she's a spy, Louise. An American spy. She's working for us. Isn't that right, Miss?
My identity is of no concern to you, sir. But thank you just the same.
No. It's you we have to thank.
We were actually hoping to keep Everett Goodstone around a little longer.
Just like he wanted to keep those elderly men around a little longer, eh?
All right. We need to clear out of here now. Mr. Perlroth, is it?
Yes.
Have you ever considered doing any kind of intelligence work? We could use a fellow like you. Here, take this card.
I'm quite flattered, but no thank you. Keep the card, miss. But if you should ever need me, you're sure to find me at the main branch of the New York Public Library at 5th Avenue and 42nd Street. I'm always there.
A postscript. Yes, Norbert Perlroth was a very real person, but what was also true in the story that you just heard... Fact. Edgar Allan Poe did indeed first publish The Facts in the Case of M. Valdemar in the American Review in 1845, and led many at the time to believe it was a piece of nonfiction, before later confessing the opposite to be true. Or was it? Fact. The town of Yaphank on Long Island was at one time a home base for a cluster of American Nazi sympathizers in the 1930s. And yes, there really was an Adolf Hitler Street in the town. The main branch of the New York Public Library on 5th Avenue and 42nd Street, where Mr. Perlroth spent much of his working life, is truly a place of wonder that rewards those who visit with visual splendor, such as the great reading room and the iconic lion statues that guard the entrance, as well as many hidden and priceless treasures waiting for you around every corner. And after you visit the library, it's just a short stroll down 42nd Street to Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium in Times Square. There you can marvel at the weird and whimsical fruits of Robert Ripley and Norbert Perlroth's unique legacies. It's open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 1 a.m.
And that concludes this week's program. Louise was played by Mary Murphy. Everett Goodstone was played by Eric Davey Gislason. Christine was played by Allison Gwynn. Michael Pate played the parts of Robert Ripley and Jonathan Headley. Thelma Astor was played by Ali Silva. and Norbert Perlroth was played by me, James Reeser. Perlroth was written by Sylvan Sandovar. The musical performance, My Heart is an Open Book, written by Hal David and Lee Pockris, was performed by Martina Da Silva, accompanied by Jason Yeager. Fireside Mystery Theater is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez, Ali Silva, and Daniel and Rebecca Graves for Fireside Mystery Productions. Our theme music is by Jason Graves. Our musical score is improvised by Steve Blanco. Our sound effects designer is Greg Russ. Our sound engineer is Wayne Silver. And our production coordinator is Dahlia Morali. Special thanks to Alexandra Kelly and all the amazing staff at the New York Public Library, 53rd Street, as well as Jeremy Helton and all of our good friends at Audioboom for helping to make this event possible. If you like what we're doing, do please take a moment to give us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us out, and your feedback means the world to us. Why not rock out a Fireside Mystery Theater t-shirt, hoodie, phone case, mug, notebook sticker, or any of the other cool items adorned with our logo? Go to the merch page at firesidemysterytheater.com and check out what's on offer. You can also connect with us on Instagram or Twitter with our handle @firesidemystery. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendar. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original radio drama on Sunday, October 1st at 2 p.m. at the Bickford Theater at the Morse Museum in Morristown, New Jersey. We're bringing a show we call Sing the Old Alma Mater. Tickets on sale now at morrismuseum.org. This is your own James Reeser. Tune in next week for a special edition of the Midnight Reading. And as you heed the voices of the night, be sure to mind the shadows.